Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger, and we are very excited for today's episode with Coleman Gearhart. Now, I've mentioned on the podcast before that I recently moved to Colorado at around the December of 2022. And one of the people that I connected with once I moved out here was Coleman. And I had the opportunity to appear on Coleman's podcast pretty recently, which is the BTB project, which stands for the Built to Be Project. And a little bit about Coleman. Coleman Gearhart is the founder and driving force behind the BTB project, the Built to Be project, a dynamic podcast that empowers listeners to discover their purpose and live their best lives, regardless of circumstances. With a rich background as a former athlete and motivational coach, Coleman has dedicated the last two decades to inspiring thousands through his personal journey. His mission is clear: to help individuals, teams, and organizations unlock their true potential. Coleman played Division I tennis at University of Northern Colorado, has coached dozens of players to receive scholarships at Division I, II, and III universities, and has coached numerous players to secure CHSAA tennis state championships in Colorado. His podcast guests range from come from diverse fields, including athletics, business, entrepreneurship, science, fitness, and nutrition. Coleman firmly believes that the impossible is nothing, and through his podcast, he invites you to join the journey of becoming 1% better with each episode and interview. And we know that you'll enjoy this episode with Coleman Gearhart. We are very excited to have Coleman Gearhart with us today. Coleman, thanks for joining us on the Tennis IQ podcast.
Yeah, Josh, Brian, it is just a privilege to be here. I've been a fan of the podcast for many moons, and to now be on and do a collaboration, and I'm just super humbled. So thanks, guys.
Absolutely. No, we're super excited to have you with us today. So let's start a little bit, with the beginning. Let's start, you know, could you tell us a little bit about your introduction to the sport of tennis and a little bit about how your journey began?
Yeah, absolutely. It, was a very unique journey. I grew up in a family where I had an older brother, and when it came to sports, my older brother was certainly the one that had the athletic talents in the family. So whether it was baseball, football, soccer, I was always finding the better end of the stick to not be competitive with my brother. And somehow, some way, when I was a little shy of 14 years old, I decided to try out for my high school tennis team in Parker, Colorado. And my brother at the time was a senior and I was a freshman. And I remember trying out and beating my brother for the last spot on the team, of which then led to a very unique relationship with my brother for that first year in high school, being duct taped to flagpoles and all sorts of interesting retaliations to finally getting him in a sport. But, you know, outside of that, my dad, he came from a tennis background. Him and my uncle, my dad played at Colorado State University before they cut their men's program, and my uncle played at U of A in Arizona. So I had some lineage definitely in my family, but I didn't pick up the passion for it until I was able to dive into that competitive spirit with my brother.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. You know, the brother and the sibling thing can often be a catalyst. And there's a good book called The Best, How Elite Athletes Are Made. And it notes how many of the elite athletes in the world are actually younger siblings. Partly, I think, in some ways, because of your story, you're seeing this older brother who you want to maybe be better than, right? Kind of motivates you. But they also get to make all the mistakes first. Right. And you can kind of benefit from their wisdom. And I'm curious if there's any of that in your story.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, I was able to kind of realize quickly that the tough love my brother was giving me was him kind of giving a sense of urgency based off of some of the mistakes he made or based off of some of the shortcomings or, you know, feeling some of that anxiety himself of, you know, not being good enough or not excelling the way that he wants to. And in a very unique way, being 4 years older than me, he was trying to pay it forward by being like, hey, these are some of the lessons I've learned, some of the tough lessons. And despite me giving you a hard time every now and then, I want to make sure that my little brother doesn't have to experience what I experienced. So I absolutely believe that my brother was looking out for me and instilling a lot of, you know, maybe kind of pseudo hacks based off of what he experienced so that I could kind of up my timeline in tennis sooner rather than later.
That makes sense. So when would you say you started taking the sport a little bit more seriously? Was that the turning point in terms of, you know, beating your brother, making that final spot on the team, or did it happen at some other point when you started taking the sport, you know, a little bit more seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I was a bigger guy, Josh, growing up. So when I started the sport, yes, I started very late. I mean, all of us on here know that a lot of kids now are starting, you know, with the quick start programs and the different size balls that you can start, you know, very young. And I didn't start really taking it serious till my teenage years. And I was kind of coveted for my athleticism more on the football and rugby side. At this point, I, you know, was kind of just shy of 6 feet tall and was kind of like a heavy set guy, more like a lineman. And I was not cut from a tennis cloth by any stretch of the imagination. So my track of development really kind of took off when I made the high school team. But when I really started diving into becoming a tennis player, it was really post high school. I graduated high school 5'10", a little over 300 pounds. So I had a lot of goals and ambitions, but I certainly didn't have the body, the fitness, the mindset to go after what I really wanted to. And I had to figure out a way to, again, like my brother was trying to provide hacks on development, I had to find it between when I graduated high school to when I went to college, where I took a gap year.
Yeah, and I read an interesting article about you going to Northern Colorado your freshman year, and you kind of had, you know, your own style. And you know, for the article, you talked about that journey of what happened in that gap year. I think you went to a tennis academy. And, you know, met some people that really helped you start to shape who you were mentally, physically. I'm wondering if you can, you know, talk a little bit about that period of time, because it sounds very transformational.
Yeah. I mean, at this point in my life, you know, mentally, Brian, I kind of was at a crossroads where, you know, I kind of had some stuff going on in the home. I had the tough love for my brother, and I had a friend of mine who was a great tennis player from Cherry Creek High School here in Colorado, which is a great tennis program. Paul Benzinski, I'll forever be grateful for him. He has Polish ties, and there was a couple gentlemen out there at the Wigwam Tennis Academy in Litchfield Park, Arizona, and it was led by Robert Wojcik, who played at South Carolina. And essentially, I had an opportunity to go out there. They gave me a job to, you know, do the water buckets on the clay courts to try to subsidize some of the cost. I couldn't live on the resort because I couldn't afford it. So I actually lived three blocks away in an old abandoned women's shelter, and it just had a mattress on the floor. And it was me and a couple other guys that were there. During the time, it was actually only me as the only American, which was kind of interesting. But yeah, transformational is definitely the word. I had a goal at that point to play Division I college tennis. And I was talking to a couple schools. And when I say talk to them, meaning I was talking at them, not talking with them, because I just wasn't ready yet. And my best friend at the time, Peter Weirich, he was an Arapahoe High School graduate here in Colorado, and he was on scholarship to play tennis at Northern Colorado. And he was able to connect me with the coach and kind of give me the lay of the land of what it would take. And what I realized was, okay, I'm gonna take this gap year. I'm gonna take this opportunity that Paul has presented me, and I'm going to go do what it takes. And yes, that article's kind of funny that you dug up, Brian, because I did have kind of a little bit of a fashion sense in college, but this was because I lost 100 pounds in 13 months. I was eating, you know, 1,250 to 1,300 calories a day. I was on the court 5 to 6 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I was away from my family. I was away from every possible comfort you can think of. And I was just going after a goal and a dream. And the byproduct of that was a little bit of confidence. I would say at that point in my life, it was maybe even some arrogance and some, you know, kind of being full of myself. But I also had to kind of create almost like an alter ego, a mindset of how I approached the game, how I approached my life to endure the rigors of playing tennis at the Division I level. So by, you know, the grace of all, the Almighty, being able to go to that academy, to put in the work, and to have it be transformative as I was, I'm forever grateful for Robert and the opportunity that was given to me.
That's quite a journey to get to that point, to achieve a, you know, an ambitious, challenging goal like that, to play, you know, Division I college tennis, and, you know, and also to have that transformation that you're talking about. So what was it like once you got to that point? You know, I think sometimes a person or an athlete has a certain goal, and it's, you know, it's to get to this point. It's to, I want to, you know, I want to reach this ranking, or I want to play at this level. And then once they get there, then it can sometimes feel like, you know, okay, I'm here, like, what's next? Or sometimes maybe then they start to take things to the next level, or they reevaluate their goals or set new goals. So what was it like? Yeah, once you got to that level, once you achieved that goal of yours, what was, tell us a little bit more about what college tennis was like for you.
Man, such a good question, because at that point, you know, you think about, you know, I'm a big believer in periodization, right? And trying to get an athlete ready through, you know, development, tapering, hitting a goal, and then maybe tapering and getting ready for the next goal. And in this case, I had a goal. I walk onto the courts, and I'll never forget the first match I played as a college tennis player. It was in New Mexico at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque, and I was frightened. I couldn't even stand up straight because I was just shaking so much. You know, I mentally got to a point where I was like, oh my goodness, like I actually did this. Like I was looking down, like I have the jersey on. I I have the equipment with me. Like, there's someone on the other side of the net. Like, I could not get out of that match soon enough. I was scared. I was, kind of tapping into a lot of the, believe it or not, the emotions and insecurities that I had before I had my transformation. It's almost like it was too good to be true. And I spent a lot of that first year being in that mindset, still trying to fight these demons of, you're never going to be good enough. How are you going to be able to do this? Your brother used to beat up at you in the past. You know, the first 14 tournaments you played as a junior, you lost the first round. You're never going to be good enough. That first lesson you took with an iconic pro in Colorado, and he said, college tennis, there's no way, man. There's no way you're going to be able to do that. I kept tapping into those insecurities, Brian, despite, to your point, an incredible moment in my life where I was able to do things that a lot of people haven't been able to do. So that first year was definitely a crossroads for me, both mentally and, you know, trying to see the future of, okay, I have made it. Now what's the next goal that I can go after?
I want to dive into something you said earlier where, like, so we were, you guys are living in Colorado. So obviously, you know, the football team is at the University of Colorado is doing quite well. We were talking a little bit about Deion Sanders, Coach Prime. And then last week, Josh asked me, hey, have you seen his NFL Hall of Fame induction speech? And I hadn't. So I went and watched it. And you said something that made me think about something he said, which is you created this alter ego. And in his speech, he talks about how he created Primetime as a vehicle to help him, you know, help his mama, his mission, right? And that was part of him becoming who he needed to be in order to support that mission. So I'm very curious about, did this alter ego now help you at all in year two? Did you tap into that more? Is that still maybe a little bit a part of who you are?
Yeah. The alter ego is what has really birthed the BTB project. So, and I know we'll dive into that in a little bit, but to answer your question, year two, I calmed down a little bit. But what ended up happening was I had a good friend of mine that was part of the kinesiology program at Northern Colorado, and he was training to be a strength coach. And this guy, Stephen Branch, he, you know, was an all-time high school athlete, baseball, basketball, football. And he just loved to train. He loved the fitness side of things. And he decided to take me on. He saw me working out in the rec center one day at the school and saw how I was working out and saw how bad my form was and things like that. And he's just like, man, please let me help you. And it almost became like a moment of, he saw my work ethic and my drive and saw where he could provide value to accommodate maybe the next step in my goal. And my goal was at the time, you know, Northern Colorado transitioned from Division II to Division I. And we were in the Big Sky Conference. And with all due respect, the transition was brutal. Everybody thinks that when you become D1, it's, you know, rainbows and sunshine, but you're competing against teams that are, you know, I'm thinking of like Northern Arizona, Montana State, Sacramento State. We, at the time, because we were so new to the Big Sky Conference, we played a piggyback schedule of Division I teams that would fly in to play Air Force. So here I am in Greeley, Colorado, which is, you know, Northern Colorado, and the United States Air Force Academy is more Southern Colorado. So if you can imagine, it's a, you know, a 2.5 hour drive to get to the Air Force Academy to play home matches. And then that's when we were playing teams like in Idaho. I mean, we were able to see teams that, you know, Drake. I mean, we're talking about just some teams that were tough. And so the alter ego that was instilled amongst the tennis academy experience and the training experience with my friend Steven, I literally got to a point where I felt like no one was going to beat me either on the court or between my ears, because there was nobody in my mind that I felt like could relate to what I've been through the last 18 to 24 months. I mean, I'm a guy that's plus 300 pounds graduating high school, being voted by my senior class most likely to be single forever, to playing Division I college tennis at 197 pounds and less than 10% body fat. I mean, how does that happen without developing some resiliency, developing some alter ego? I mean, yeah, I felt like I was the prime of my tennis, and I wasn't going to let anybody take that away from me as I developed that next step of what Steven instilled of the training side. And I mean, getting my body to really be strong, because when you lose that much weight, guys, in a short period of time, you got to add strength back, you got to add alignment back. And I'm grateful for what he did to help me.
That definitely makes sense. And I'm, again, you know, that I think the remarkable journey that you had to get to that point, it sounds like, you know, continues in certain ways, just in terms of sort of a new chapter of, okay, I'm here, but you know, this is quite a challenge. You know, we're playing these D1 schools. Where, you know, it sounds like the school or the team itself is in a bit of a transition from that, you know, from that D2 level to that D1 level. And also, you know, I want to get my body right where, okay, I've lost, you know, 100+ pounds, but maybe my strength and, you know, and some of the other aspects of my athleticism aren't where I want them to be. So I think it's very cool that you had, you know, that you had that individual who was able to help you with that journey. And it sounds like you were able to learn a lot and develop a lot through that period of time. How, as you look at, you know, other chapters of your college experience and maybe the rest of your college experience, what were some of the other things that stood out, or some of the other, you know, highlights, or can you tell us, you know, a little bit more about how the journey went during the rest of that experience?
Yeah, no, it had certainly a lot of twists and turns. As you guys know, you know, tennis is in a very unique place right now. A lot of programs are getting cut at the collegiate level. My program, unfortunately, Northern Colorado, got cut during COVID. So it's no longer there. And I share that because we had a lot of turnover in our coaching staff. I had 5 coaches in 4 years.
Wow.
And I share that because when you have, you know, a program and hopefully a culture, that culture is constantly shifting when you have coaches coming in and out. So, you know, just kind of keeping the timeline going into my junior year, I was at a place where I felt like not only could I compete for the team, but I could break some of these school records. And when I say school records, we were kind of known at the Division II level to have some success back in the day, but nobody ever, you know, as far as, you know, matches or tournament victories, no one ever tapped into that because we're so new to Division I. So at that point in my life, I had a tough personal circumstance. My mom passed away right before my junior year. And I just remember kind of having another, you know, fuel to the fire, right? She didn't get to watch me play all that much growing up, and I wish she did, but it wasn't to be, unfortunately. And I remember going to a tournament out at the Creighton Blue Jay Invitational in Omaha, Nebraska. And I just remember the draw and the level of tennis there. And I had played it the last 2 years, and I would usually lose the first round. I could never break through because it was just, I mean, it's loaded. You got Creighton, you got Iowa, you got Nebraska. I mean, it was just loaded. And I kind of took it upon myself, you know, with this additional layer of kind of motivation in my life to go after it. And it was three set tiebreakers to get to the final. And then I played a gentleman by the name of Andreas Espinoza in the final. He played at Nebraska Kearney and was a Division II national champion runner up. This guy, I mean, he had tour points. He was from Mexico. I don't know what it is, but between him and Sacramento State, they had ties to the Mexico Davis Cup team. So every time we were playing these guys, I mean, I kind of gave you an understanding of my build, my stature. I'm not going to stand at the baseline and hit, you know, 95 ball rallies with these guys. I'm trying to come in and make things happen as a servant volleyer. And this guy just grinded. And it kind of was just a full circle moment in that final match where it was, I had the alter ego. I had the body. I had the motivation. And this guy was going to beat me on paper 9.5 out of 10 times. And it was another third set tiebreak. And I won four third set tiebreak matches to win that tournament. And that's the first ever and still the only tournament win by a Division I player from the University of Northern Colorado.
That's so cool. And to do it in, you know, that fashion where, yeah, maybe you're not a grinder from a style of play, but you kind of, you know, grinded out these matches, right, through a competitive and mental perspective, right? Because that takes a lot of effort to be able to do that four times in a row, which is a really great, great story. And it just sounds like it all came together for you there, Coleman, right? Maybe it was just sort of the perfect storm of motivation, the alter ego, all your experience. I've been here before. I know what this is like. And you also felt obviously very challenged because these guys are good yeah. players for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, in my career to that point, I played four Americans in 4 years. So as much as I'm sitting here sharing my story, with all due respect, the people that I were playing against, I mean, some of these guys were coming from third world countries. Some of them were coming from much more devastating hardships than I ever faced.
For sure.
And I kind of kept that perspective in my mindset, in my alter ego, that I had to kind of, you know, and this is really the truth, at that point in my tennis career, I kind of willed myself to have some success. But as a coach now, I don't teach that. I teach something much different, but I certainly, you know, did some things that were pretty extraordinary because if I didn't have tennis, if I didn't have the opportunity that I had, I don't know where I would be, guys, but that's kind of part of, you know, the journey is being able to, you know, reflect back and be like, man, you know, college tennis was awesome and I'm forever grateful for what I did as a player. But at the end of the day, there's been far more fruit coming from the olive tree, being a coach, being a mentor, giving back. And I'm so thankful, you know, my senior year to kind of wrap up my college tennis is I played a match. It was right before, right before kind of the end of the spring season, and I had blown a disc in my back. And I go in and get an MRI, and they're like, yeah, you blew a disc in your back. And then all of a sudden they did an MRI with contrast because they saw something else there. And I had a tumor in my spinal canal. So I had to have the tumor removed. And that's what ultimately ended my collegiate career. But I share that because if that tumor wasn't found in my back, you know, I probably would have kept trying to ride the collegiate playing train as much as I could. And I did some pro amateur stuff after college, but that was kind of really a defining moment in my life where it was like, okay, hey, I did a lot of neat things. Like I, you know, as Coach Prime always says, like, I've done me, like I've done me. Now it's time to help you guys. And that's kind of the approach that I took after that surgery.
So tell us a little bit about that in terms of that next chapter, right? So, you know, the college chapter starts to come to a close, and yeah, you've done you, and now it's time to help others. So tell us a little bit about sort of that transition from, you know, playing college tennis to starting to think about coaching, and also about how that led you to some of the work that you do today with the B2B project.
Yeah, the transition, you know, and it's funny because it goes back to my older brother, right? When I hurt my back, I spent some time watching my brother coach. And my brother is to this day a high school soccer coach. He also coaches club soccer. And I remember watching, you know, him coaching a couple games and just how he interacted with the players, the presence that he had. I'm like, huh, that looks kind of cool. And yeah, when I got out of that surgery, I had a little bit of complications. So it took me a little while to truly get back. I had to learn how to walk again. I had paralysis in my pelvis. And again, it's adding more perspective to the journey. And I just got to a point where I was like, you know what, I'm going to try this high school tennis coaching thing. I went and got my USPTA certification and tried to find a country club job. And those were kind of few and far between because Colorado, it's a little bit tough to break into that because of the seasonal weather. But I ended up finding a high school opportunity at Chatfield Senior High in Littleton. And I'll never forget it. I ended up applying for this job and I'm about to turn 23 years old. And this is for a high school girls tennis position. Okay. And I'll never forget getting to the final interview with the athletic director, Chad Brewer. And this guy sits me down and he's just like, Coleman, I need you to tell me something. And I'm like, what's going on? And at the time in Jefferson County, which was the school district that this school was in, there was some issues with coaches in the district. So they weren't looking at trying to hire a 23-year-old out of college. They were trying to find someone that, you know, might have suited what they felt they needed at the time. And he just sat me down. He's like, Coleman, I just need you to tell me something. I'm like, what? He's like, can you promise me to teach and to mentor these girls as if they were your own daughter? And I looked at him in the eyes and I'm like, done. I can do it. And at the time it was a really good team. I inherited a good team. The number one singles player's father, Kerry Brading, was a phenomenal coach out of Colorado. And, you know, Kelsey was a bona fide number one. And the first 2 years that I coach high school tennis, you know, I'm competing for state championships. And it, you know, kind of reflected to that moment of, you know, watching my brother coach to, you know, here I am coaching. And that was kind of the first phase of what I wanted to tap into. Because if you think back to where I was in high school, I adore my high school coach. he was a good guy, very good tennis player, won a state championship at Cherry Creek, and, you know, had the tennis acumen. But at the time when I had those big goals, I didn't necessarily feel like I was supported, that I was kind of looked at like I had 10 heads. And when I decided that I was going to coach, Josh, I wanted to make sure that I could be a coach like I never had. I wanted to be in a positive light. I wanted to instill values and wisdom and encouragement and motivation to make them feel like whatever goal that they have, that impossible is truly nothing. And that moment that I had as a high school coach and the moments that I had as a player is what kind of developed the BTB project. BTB is an acronym of a nickname that I got growing up, and it was Big Teddy Bear. And I hated being called Big Teddy Bear. And the moment that I had an opportunity coming out of college to start my own business, which is Built to Be Tennis and Fitness, I took that acronym that was something that was a negative in my life, and I turned it into a positive.
I think it's cool that you used past experiences with coaches and as an athlete as insight to how you wanted to be and how you wanted to be different. I think many coaches tend to repeat the patterns of the people who coach them, you know, and I think it does take a really a keen sense of awareness and insight in order to change that and to make it your own. And so I just want to just acknowledge that, Coleman, that that's a wonderful thing that you were able to do. And I'm sure all your students are far better off because of that perspective. Let's talk about Built to Be, B2B.
Yeah.
And how all of this has, you know, kind of be, you know, gone into that particular project and, you know, your philosophy for it, your mission for what it is you're trying to do. Because, you know, tennis and fitness, okay, that sounds obvious, but there's obviously another layer of depth there that's more about you and your philosophy, your motivation, your, you know, service to these athletes.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest epidemics in development of, I'm just going to say athletes in general, is, you know, and obviously tennis is where all of us have had some success and have coached in or whatnot and have seen development in certain ways. But what I noticed growing up was I could go and I could get my private tennis lesson. I could go and do some drills. I could go hire a fitness instructor, but I really didn't have somebody quarterbacking my development. So Built to Be is not just a catchy slogan. It's actually a question that I ask each and every person that I am helping. What are you built to be? What are you built to become? And if tennis is the, you know, kind of way that we connect, it might be tennis related, but they might say, you know, hey, I want to play to the best of my ability in high school and then play club tennis in college. Or I want to play to the best of my ability in high school, and if I can get a scholarship, or if I can walk on and play, you know, a JUCO or D3, fantastic. So it's really the holistic approach. Quarterbacking development of athletes is what the project is about. And a lot of it too is just, you know, I want these kids that I'm helping to not only achieve their athletic goal, but I want them to be good contributors to society after it's all said and done. And that's why it's a mission. It's a collaborative effort that whatever interaction that they have with me, I want them to instill that into others and pay it forward.
I love that. I love that mission. So when did it transition from, you know, you as a recent grad, you know, coaching this girls' tennis program to what it is today, where it has some of these different pieces, the tennis piece, the fitness piece, the bigger picture piece in terms of, you know, motivation and that sort of work. When did it, you know, was it all at once that you sort of went from just the tennis coaching to sort of the quarterbacking of that process, or was it sort of one step at a time as well?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely had some steps and twists and turns. The big breakthrough I got was working with, you know, one of my great mentors, Jeff Salzenstein. He was coming off the tour and was teaching tennis lessons at Gates Tennis Center in Colorado. And I went to him just as more of a student than anything else. I paid for a lesson just because I'm like, gosh, you know, how many guys come from Colorado tennis that play 100 in the world and, you know, play Chang on, you know, center court at the US Open. I mean, there's so much that I could learn from him. So that's really kind of where it all started. Was I was kind of integrated into some of the best high performance juniors in the state of Colorado through Jeff. And he asked me to actually help him when he had an academy at Gates. After I had that lesson with him, he's like, wow, you know, you're curious about doing this. I want you to help me build this. So I was able to be around just some tremendous players. You know, some names that come to mind are, you know, Rebecca Weissman. She was an incredible player out of Loveland, Colorado. She played at USC and finished her career at LMU. Ashley Leahy, she was one of the top players out of Pepperdine. Sam Martinelli, she played at Yale. I was just around just tremendous talent. And I took a lot of that experience with Jeff. And then when I was able to finally get a true teaching professional job, which ironically was back in Parker, where I grew up at the Pinery Country Club, I got a call from another tremendous mentor, Gary Seymour, who's from South Africa, who's just an amazing coach. And he worked a lot with Kellen D'Amico, who's a good friend of mine that played at Texas and junior Wimbledon champion. And I kind of had a hub at that point, Josh, to where I have my LLC. I'm a contractor at this point, a 1099 contractor. And I asked Gary, like, hey, like, let me like run the junior program. And I started to kind of, you know, get a lot of attention from the people that I met through Jeff to the high school scene. A lot of people saw the success I was having as a high school coach. So I had kids driving in from Colorado Springs, from Brighton, couple kids coming in from Wyoming, Las Vegas. And I was doing holistic training programs for kids. So I was able to stay in high school tennis. At that point, I had left Chatfield, became an assistant coach at Regis Jesuit, and focused more on my full-time teaching and, you know, making this project, this idea come to life by individualized holistic training programs for kids that wanted to play at the next level.
I think it's great, this idea of like quarterbacking the experience, because I think in general, sort of the American model tends to be very, very decentralized, and you're really having to advocate for yourself constantly. And right, you may end up at an academy in which you are just a number. And you're out there maybe with four or five other kids on a court, and it's not really designed for you. It's really designed for the economic model of the business.
Right.
And I think it's great that you're flipping that equation and really helping these players, you know, you understand the path that they need to go on because you've lived it and where they can go. I guess maybe talk a little bit more about some of the philosophy of like when you're engaging with an individual. You know, what are some of those conversations like to, you know, to tune them into the bigger perspective, right? Because there's tennis and then there's life. And yes. And I think we want them to realize that.
Yeah, I mean, early on in my coaching career, and I say this all the time, is like, I used to coach a lot at kids. But really, my breakthrough has been coaching with kids. It's a collaboration. It's a lot more listening than it is saying. So if you notice, I'm very, very intentional with that open-ended question, what are you built to be? It's an open-ended question to get them talking, for them to tell me how they like to be coached, for them to tell me what their goals and aspirations are. And if I can facilitate an environment of high empathy, I'm going to make you work, but I'm going to love you the whole time. Being able to have somehow, some way, my story be something that can relate to them or to impact them. If it is, what a blessing. I'm thankful for that. But a lot of it comes down to constant communication and open line, open dialogue. Because all of us on here know when you're on the tennis court, it is sometimes an incredibly lonely place. And being able to know that you have some advocacy, not only advocacy for yourself, but advocacy from a coach that believes in you. A lot of those positive affirmations that I use with players, that's contagious. You know, Josh, when you and I were able to talk, when I interviewed you on my episode, you know, being able to tap into belief and those belief mechanisms when things are tough. And the whole, you know, mission of the holistic program is to constantly be able to receive feedback, not feel ashamed or discouraged from that feedback, and have it be a place where it's always growth mindset. You know, I feel like every single day when, you know, I'm helping somebody, that's an opportunity to get 1% better or 1% worse. There's nothing more to it than that. And if we can stack a lot of 1% better days, that's why there's been success. And, you know, I kind of took me a little bit of time to start being open and available to sharing it, because I'm so enamored and I know how important it is to have that individualized connection with my players. But what I've realized is a lot of these stories that were happening are now being shared, and it's impacting even more people's lives because I'm just one piece of the story. But knowing how contagious it's been has led to, you know, starting a podcast. It's led to impacting even more people's lives that I could never thought I would ever imagine, because I finally said, you know what, I'm going to talk about some of these things. So yeah, for 13 years, as I'm developing the BTB project, I thought about doing a podcast, thought about sharing the stories, thought about it. And eventually January of, you know, 2023, I, you know, just recorded my 60th episode, and I'm continuing to tell the stories that have occurred since I made the decision to change that acronym into a positive.
I think that's very cool. And I also love hearing how the name came about in terms of, you know, that nickname that you were given, that, you know, was a negative, was maybe embarrassing or humiliating, and how almost that name itself, that acronym itself, you know, is sort of an alter ego, where it's like, okay, watch me take this negative and turn it into something inspiring and transformational, and really a way to help people, which is unbelievable. And I know you mentioned the podcast, and again, I had the pleasure of taking part in an episode with you, which was awesome. And yeah, could you tell us about, you know, a little bit about that journey and about how, you know, and I find this as well. And Brian, maybe you can, you know, relate. I mean, I think, you know, in terms of the work that I do and that Brian, you do as well, in terms of sports psychology, you know, you can reach a certain number of people through sessions, right? Whether it's individual sessions or group sessions, you can connect and reach a certain number of people. But through the podcast, you're able to, you know, reach you know, quite a bit more, and you're really able to reach a lot of people, and you're, you know, you're reaching them in a different way, but able to get that message out there. Hopefully people are able to learn. Hopefully people are able to maybe think about things a little bit differently. So tell us a little bit about you know, that journey with the podcast, you know, being 60 or so episodes in, and, you know, maybe some of the highlights, and a little bit more about what that journey's looked like.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you asking. It actually went to a point where when I started, I sought out mentorship for podcasting. Whether it's, I mean, literally listening to Tennis IQ podcasts, or, you know, guys like Ed Milet, you know, Jay Shetty, Tom Bilyeu. I mean, there's a lot of just tremendous, you know, thought leaders, speakers. Eric Thomas. I'm a big believer in what he's doing. I mean, I know we keep bringing up Deion Sanders, but a lot of the things that, you know, I kind of feed off of, like, well, wait a second, you know, some of the stuff that motivates me each and every day, why can't I be an extension of that, right? And I came across a guy that, and this is a great story. So my son, he's 17 years old. He's a competitive runner. He runs cross country and track. And I came across a guy that just graduated high school, and his name is Dominic Schleter. And he has a podcast called The Running Effect. And The Running Effect podcast is, I believe, one of the top five, like, sport running podcasts in the country. And I just started listening to some of his episodes, and his whole mission is to take the sport of running and to share the stories of these individuals, and to have it be a platform of which, like, hey, well, I'm going to pull back the curtain of the sport of running. And I mean, the mental side of that sport in itself is a whole nother conversation, but nonetheless, I got on LinkedIn, and I saw this young man had a LinkedIn, and I reached out to him, say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing a podcast, and yours is awesome. I'd love your 2 cents. And believe it or not, this guy, gave me his email address, said, hey, ask me whatever you want. I asked him some questions. It led to us having multiple phone conversations. And I told him a little bit about what I'm thinking. And I had a 19, or, you know, at the time he was 18, an 18-year-old kid from the East Coast teach a 39-year-old how to podcast. And to this day, I mean, Dominic's crushing it. He decided to forego college. He's doing the Running Effect podcast full time. I believe he's, you know, getting endorsements from Hoka and, you know, various opportunities to continue his mission, to continue his passion. So I'm forever indebted and grateful for his mentorship to help me with this. But you know, it came down to Josh really taking my skill set and being like, okay, yeah, I'm known as the tennis guy, but a lot of people say that, like, I'm motivating, right? And, like, okay, that's kind of interesting. Why am I motivating? Well, like, you give, like, these really cool talks, like these awesome speeches. I'm like, I do. I'm like, I don't, like, script any of this stuff. Like, I just kind of know, again, coach with you, not at you. And if you're motivated by it, awesome. So I started having some clients be like, hey, like if you ever start a podcast, I'm on it. I want to share my story. And yeah, an episode that comes to mind that's a big highlight was one of my first in-person episodes. I have kind of a studio here to my right. I got a couple of chairs and a couple additional microphones, and I've been able to have some in-person interviews. And the first person that I interviewed was somebody that called me. She was crying on the side of the road because she listened to my first podcast episode. And it was just an introduction to the BTB project. And basically it was a summary of some of the stories that I've shared on this episode. And she was touched by it. She was like, you have no idea what that meant to me. And 3 days later, she comes in here and shares her story. Her name is Peyton Palermo, and she's a survivor of 5 brain surgeries. She had tumors that were growing near her cerebellum, and she is an ambassador for Children's Hospital. And this young lady, between, you know, up till the age of 5, she had 4 of the surgeries, and then it came back again when she was 14. And that's when I met her, because the last time that the tumor was taken out, it atrophied the right side of her body. So at this point, I'm at the country club, and she was a academy kid. She was working at a place called High Altitude Tennis. So she was full-time training, and it all got taken away from her from this most recent surgery. And I look at her and I'm like, you know, I'm watching her hit with her dad. Her dad's feeding her balls, and like her right side, she had no strength. And I go over to her and I'm like, what are your thoughts about hitting a 200 forehand? And she's like, what are you talking about? And at the time, because when I had my tumor taken out, I had issues with overall strength and neuropathy throughout my body. And I ended up started playing with a 2-handle tennis racket. I had a friend of mine, Brian Battistone, who,
I've seen his sort of volleyball style serve.
Yes.
That racket. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the guy played the Colorado State Open a few times. And at the time I was just enamored with the serve, and he was like, hey, you know, this actually could help you if you feel some weakness. So long story short, she ended up working with me full time. And this was at like 5:15 in the morning. And all this girl wanted to do was play varsity high school tennis. And over a 9-month period, we were working. We were doing things when no one was watching. We were doing the hard work, right? It literally made me reflect back to, you know, my tennis academy days and the transformation that I made. And I'm like, okay, like I'm going to pay this forward. And this young lady was able to play high school varsity tennis her senior year, hitting a cross-handed 2-handed forehand and a regular backhand, which was her weapon. She regained her balance. She regained her confidence. She regained her strength. And the first in-person episode of the BTV Project podcast was her sitting in the chair sharing her story. And it's that type of moment to where I'm like, you know, I'm doing the right thing here. This is what I was called to do. This is what I was meant to do. And from there, you know, being able to have mentors sitting in the seat, you know, Jeff Salzenstein, you know, shared his story, introduced me to Dick Gould, Stanford coach, 17-time national champion, tremendous episode. I just had a young lady by the name of Tate Schroeder. She's Tate Rose now after being married. She was a high school state champion in 2014 in Colorado after surviving a school shooting. And she went on to play at, you know, Missouri, Clemson, and now is an assistant tennis coach at Virginia Tech. And I was, you know, a high school coach at Regis Jesuit when she won the title. I never talked to her. I just watched her play, and I'm like, wow, what a cool story. And as you start getting some momentum of episodes, you realize, Wait a second. I had this gentleman by the name of Peter Richmond on, who's a tremendous high performance coach here in Colorado, played at LSU and number one Canadian back in the day. And he was Tate's coach in college or in high school. I'm like, wow, like this is kind of neat how as you continue to do these episodes and build some momentum, you realize, hey, the things that I was doing as a tennis coach, and as you were mentioning, Josh, you have a certain amount of reach when you're doing one-to-ones or group sessions, even in the psychology space. And I just felt like it was a platform to reach more people, to have the mission pay forward and to have it be contagious.
It's pretty cool how those connections just sort of start forming in your mind as you connected these dots of all these different athletes. And now a lot of it's coming into your podcast. So I'm curious, you know, what kind of future projects are you thinking about, Coleman? Where does this all go next? Or maybe the podcast is something that goes for a while, but I'm curious, yeah, what are you thinking about?
Yeah, you know, I've kind of made it really intentional and important for me, Brian, to be more outspoken about my goals. Sometimes I keep stuff, you know, tight to the chest, but as I verbalize things, as I plan things, as I kind of get it out there, I've been fortunate enough to have myself surrounded by people who keep bringing me up and supporting me in these endeavors. And, you know, I'm very fortunate right now to continue to have a pretty good foundation of future guests on the BTB project and continuing to share the stories of either former clients or people that have impacted me, whether it's direct or indirect. But the two big things that I have coming up that I'm really excited about is more collaborative efforts. I have a great mentor of mine, Scott Ford, who taught me how to really see the game of tennis. And he taught me that keeping your eye on the ball is not always the best option. And he does a lot of, you know, kind of processing information to where as a tennis player, if you can hit a ball and meet the ball at the point of contact, and all you're doing is controlling your contact point, at that point, are you really focusing on the ball or are you focusing on the contact point? And it's those types of changes that when I was telling you about willing my way to be successful in tennis, I've tapped much more into being more cerebral, understanding how our minds and our bodies work in the sport of tennis. And he is part of a tremendous group called Evo Sports Collective, which is a group of former athletes, coaches, and professionals that really come together, do master classes, do, you know, ways to essentially provide content to folks that are interested in trying to find flow state in sports. And I've been very grateful to do a few collaborations with them so far and kind of being on that mission to put myself around other coaches and professionals that are far better at that than I am, and, you know, try to provide value there. And lastly, going back to Peyton, she has a tremendous TED talk after she kind of overcame her brain tumors and being able to have opportunities on a platform like that. I've been in talks with a few TEDx locations, and I absolutely see myself sooner rather than later being able to share the BTB project story on a TED stage. So
very cool. And I think, and I also, I know, you know, with Jeff Salzenstein, who you brought up, I know he's sort of made that transition to you know, to doing a lot of speaking and a lot of, you know, transformational work with athletes. So I think that's really cool. And I think, you know, just throughout this episode, hearing more about your journey and your sort of transformation at different chapters, and both in terms of your transformation and also how that, you know, how that has led you to doing the work that you do today in terms of helping, you know, helping young athletes and helping them transform their games and their lives in different ways. So I think that's, you know, I think that that's really awesome. And I think it's been really great hearing about that journey and some of the lessons along the way. I think it's been really, really awesome hearing about all that and also about what's coming next and what's exciting you about, you know, about your future and about, you know, future ways to impact people. So yeah, really, really love what you're doing.
I appreciate that. It is really neat, as you mentioned, what Jeff's doing. And, you know, I do see that this is not just, helping tennis players moment in my life anymore. There's a lot of crossover into, you know, my full-time job is I'm a sales representative. So I'm creating relationships and, hearing a lot of different stories and helping provide value to needs in that way as well. And I believe that a lot of the value that I can provide with a BTB project platform can help sales professionals, can help leadership teams, can help organizations. And again, it's just about trying to take whatever difficult circumstance, whatever obstacle that you're trying to overcome in your life, that I believe a well-established why can overcome anyhow. And I just want to continue to allow people to believe in that, and that each and every day we have a chance to wake up, to live that day, to be 1% better. That's a pretty good day. And I'm just excited to continue to pay that mission forward.
Well, thank you for being here, Coleman. I know personally, I'm very inspired by this conversation. So thanks for coming on and sharing your story with us. I'm sure listeners are going to love this. And what are the best ways to find you? Obviously, the podcast. How else can people connect with you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I am in the middle of generating a full-fledged website that will allow you to tap into some of the services that I provide on the speaking side and obviously getting a little bit more access and in depth into my podcast. But yeah, the podcast is the BTB Project. I'm on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Type it into the Google engine. You can find me there. You can find that long lost article that Brian dug up about my old fashionista moments. No, outside of that, once I get the website fired up, I'll certainly provide that, you know, to you guys. And really it's just continuing to find ways to have outreach. You know, my Instagram is to the BTB Project. You'll see a lot of my sweaty running videos. I tend to post kind of some of my thoughts before I post an interview on the podcast after exerting my body, putting myself into a good mental state to interact with you guys. And I highly suggest the listeners, if you want a good outlet, try going on a jog in a sweatsuit, and it's a pretty good time. So
absolutely. Especially with the altitude here, I can speak from personal experience that it's a bit tougher. It's definitely, especially coming from, you know, the Northeast, being out in Colorado, being, you know, 5,000 feet up here, or you know, a little more, a little less, depending on where you are, it's a challenge. But thank you Coleman, this was awesome, and I know people will really enjoy this. And yeah, people can definitely check out the BTB project and, you know, see all of the awesome, inspiring work that you're doing. So thank you again.
And Josh, Brian, I appreciate you two and what you guys are doing with Tennis IQ podcast. I mean, I've been tuning in now for a little over a year, and just the depth and knowledge that you guys go into of how important the mental side of tennis is. I mean, it's really 90% of the battle. And I think that not only some of the stories that you've shared personally, but, you know, equating that to what we're seeing on the tour, and, you know, impacting a lot of people's lives through this podcast. You guys are crushing it, and I'm forever grateful for the opportunity to chat with you guys today.
Well, that was an awesome conversation. And I would say one of my biggest takeaways just after, you know, speaking with Coleman and, you know, hearing more about both his journey and also the journeys and stories of some of the people that he's worked with and some of the people that have appeared on his podcast is, you know, just that regardless of the hardship, regardless of the circumstances, and Coleman certainly, you know, went through a lot in terms of his own personal journey, that, you know, with the right sort of attitude, with the right sort of mindset, you can be successful. I mean, I think, you know, he talked about different challenges that he had between the tumor that he had, between, you know, between all the weight that he lost through going to that tennis academy, you know, through starting tennis at a much later age than most players. But, you know, through each step, he persevered and, you know, and seemed to have learned a lot along the way in terms of mindset, in terms of attitude, in terms of really what it takes to persevere and to make it out of these tough conditions. And I like how he also brought up, you know, different people that he's worked with and have been on his podcast that have also been through, you know, very challenging circumstances as well that life dealt them. And I think, you know, it's just truly inspiring to hear about how, you know, these people have also made it to the other side of it. And I think there's a lot that everyone can learn and take away from a story and a mission like that. And I can say I'm definitely, you know, definitely feel inspired. And, you know, I think that it just really shows that, you know, the importance of attitude and mindset in both overcoming and in terms of achieving.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, I said at the end when we said goodbye to Coleman that I was really inspired by the conversation, and it was wonderful. I think for me, the takeaway, Josh, was we got into that discussion about the alter ego and comparing it a little bit to Deion Sanders and how he created an alter ego of Prime Time and now Coach Prime. And so when I think about that, that concept also has some underpinnings in philosophical traditions, whether it's Stoic philosophy. They talk about the ideal sage, existential philosophy as well, really, where you're creating an ideal self and a role model for yourself, your best self. And the more that you can identify with that, and maybe it's different, a little bit different than who you are, it can really help you achieve different things. So that might be something for people to consider is, yeah, what does that look like for me? What is that maybe best self, that ideal sage or role model really look like for me? And can I be that more? Because I know that person is going to achieve these great things. And as you said, you know, this is a lot about mindset and being open-minded, being determined. You know, sometimes desperate circumstances lead to some of this. And that's something that we all have to kind of create for ourselves, depending on our life circumstances. But we can do that. And so, yeah, it was a tremendously inspiring conversation. I'm really glad that we had him on. And I'm sure we can stay connected with him in various ways. So,
definitely. And just wanted to say also just how sort of connecting with that alter ego, how he was able to take a negative in terms of that, you know, in terms of a nickname that he was given, right, early in life, and how he was able to take that negative and take something that maybe was painful and really transform that into a project, a mission that really can, you know, inspire so many others.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I love the path that he's on. So it's a fantastic, fantastic story. So, well, that's our show for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And again, thanks again to Coleman Gearhart for appearing and speaking with us. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're enjoying the content that Josh and I discuss on the show, please rate and review the podcast so other tennis enthusiasts can find it more easily. Additionally, to be notified of new episodes, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube. You can also check us out on Instagram. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.